All right, everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast. This is our WrestleMania Backlash review show. I've got YouTube's The Botch Guy, as always, who joins me immediately following every pay-per-view. So I think you're going to enjoy this conversation, as always. He brings such a great energy, and I got to give a shout-out to him. So we're going to get to that conversation right after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, so if you guys haven't listened to the podcast Long Shot Leaders yet, you're missing out. And you may ask, what's so special about this podcast? Well, number one, it is hosted by Michael Stein. He's an entrepreneur, actor, filmmaker, comedian, and self-help expert. And he's come up with a really great idea for his show. What he does is tell stories of underdogs who found success. For example, some of his guests that he's had on, Sean Spector, he's the co-founder of Gamefly and Drop-Off. Bruce Valanche, he's a six-time Emmy Award winner, writer, and actor. And most recently, he interviewed former WWE writer Vince Russo, and the conversation was awesome. I mean, we got insight from Vince that I have not heard from any other podcast, including what he believes makes a great wrestler, why some people can't stand Vince Russo today because of the on-screen heel character that he played. And he talked about something that means even more to him than the massive ratings that occurred during the Attitude Era. So guys, go check out Long Shot Leaders with Michael Stein. It's available on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. It's already got a perfect 5-star rating. I mean, that's unheard of with podcasts. So go check out Long Shot Leaders with Michael Stein. There is such a great diversity of hosts and topics that it will definitely inspire you, and you'll be able to find something that you can relate to. So go check out Long Shot Leaders today.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your number one source for the latest in WWE news and straightforward analysis.
Are you ready to get this thing going?
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
Then let's get this show started right now.
All right, it is time to discuss WrestleMania Backlash with myself and the Botch Guy, of course. We're going to get to that conversation, a very spirited conversation as always, in just a couple of moments. But first, welcome to the show. Thank you for those of you who have never joined us before. I'd like to invite you to hit that subscribe button because you're going to miss out on a whole lot of content if you don't. We publish 9 shows a week. 9. Yes, I know that's a lot. But also soon, upcoming on Apple Podcasts, it's not available yet, but we will be offering ad-free listening over on Apple Podcasts very shortly. Of course, there's a software update Apple has to do that's not in our control, but just giving you a heads up that pretty soon the ad-free experience will be coming to Apple Podcasts. But all the other exclusive stuff, including shout-outs on the show and access to a Discord server that I had a blast on this afternoon and evening talking to our patrons in real time about the pay-per-view as it was going on. We were chatting and giving our opinions. It was so much fun. That is still exclusive to Patreon and will continue to be. So the latest patron I want to give a shout out to, of course, is Karen Douglas. Thank you so much, Karen, for becoming a patron of the show. It is much appreciated, and I hope you enjoy all the benefits that come with it. I think that you will. And if you're interested also in joining Karen and all of our other patrons, head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. Check us out, guys. I think that you will be pleasantly surprised with how much we offer there. So, okay. Well, I think that is it for right now. Again, tomorrow is Monday Night Raw, and then Tuesday is when I review Monday Night Raw. So I'll be back on Tuesday. And Wednesday is the Wrestling Nostalgia exclusive to Patreon. From now on, it won't be on our free feed. And the Mailbag, which is on our free feed, is also coming on Wednesday. So I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend, whatever's left of it, and get into your new week here. So let's get things going. Enough of the blabber. Let's talk to The Botch Guy. YouTube's The Botch Guy. Go subscribe to him, by the way. And follow him on Twitter at botch_guy. That's where he's at now. So don't miss it. Thanks, everybody. As always, I'll talk to you next time. All right. Well, it is another pay-per-view come and gone. I think we can finally get rid of the WrestleMania brand name, and we can move on to Hell in a Cell next pay-per-view, which, you know, I'll ask you about that a little bit later, Botch Guy. But welcome to the show, Botch Guy. And if no one knows who you are, well, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience, let them know what you do, and you've also got a new social media account, so share that as well.
Well, we're not going to call it WrestleMania in a Cell? No? Oh, come on. Missed marketing opportunity there. How's it going, everybody? Thanks for having me once again, Matt. It's always a pleasure being here. Yes, I'm called The Botch Guy. I'm on YouTube. You can definitely catch me over there. Subscribe to me if you'd like. That would be fantastic. We're growing the channel at a pretty rapid pace right now, which is kind of crazy. But more importantly, if you guys want to do me the honor, everybody that is listening here, go check out my Twitter. I actually just started Twitter a couple of days ago. So I'm pretty new to the social media aspect for Twitter. It's kind of scary place to kind of get myself into. But head over there onto my Twitter. It's called botch_guy, @botch_guy. The real Botch Guy, it's the title there. And definitely give me a follow over there. I would really appreciate it. And yeah, let's talk some WrestleMania backlash.
I love the pause there. Yeah. Let's talk some backlash here. And overall, I would say, and you and I were talking a little bit off the air here, that it was a solid clean show is how you put it. I think that's a good way to put it too. It was just kind of there, and there were some standout matches. Nothing was particularly terrible, although I have some thoughts about the Army of the Dead that'll be coming shortly. What did you think generally about this pay-per-view? Kind of looking at it high level.
I think the best way to describe this pay-per-view, honestly, is balanced. I think it was a very well-balanced show with good matches, nothing overly surprising, very predictable, but entertaining. I honestly, it was kind of nice as a YouTuber to just kind of be able to go and just watch the show instead of creating a ton of content for it, because it was one of those shows where like nothing was like, oh, I have to make a video on it. But at the same time, I really did enjoy the show. The zombie stuff was, we'll talk about it. It was... it was something.
Yeah. I have some feelings on that, but we'll get to that in just a couple minutes. But first, of course, we had the kickoff match. It was Sheamus and Ricochet, and Sheamus beat Ricochet. I guess, again, that's kind of telling of where the United States Championship is sitting right now in the eyes of WWE's pecking order, that it's on the kickoff show. So there's that. But in the proper show of Raw, it started out with the Raw Women's Championship. Rhea Ripley versus Asuka versus Charlotte Flair in a triple threat match. And guys, don't worry if you don't understand the rules of the triple threat match. WWE is there every time to make sure that you know that the champion can lose the belt without actually being involved in the decision. I know it's confusing and they don't really make it clear. I'm very glad that they were there to clear things up, because every time they have these matches, I'm like, what are the rules, right? Because it's so confusing. So, of course, we get the outcome here of Rhea Ripley defeating or winning the match and getting the pinfall after kind of a weird ending of Charlotte Flair not interfering to break up the pin. But it was explained by Corey Graves that the reason she didn't come in to break the pin is she fell off the apron from her kick. I didn't see it. It was weird. But I guess I'll toss it to you for details in terms of how you like the match, and do you agree with the outcome?
Well, first of all, Adnan Virk, he had about seven "oh my" that happened in that match. You know what? I'm sure he's a super nice guy. I'm sure he's a lovely Canadian there, and you know, I'm sure he does his job very, very well when it comes to, you know, backstage stuff and like news. But my God, man, like, it's been enough time now where I can honestly say he doesn't have the charisma to be a play-by-play guy for the WWE. In my personal opinion, I think he's doing fine, but it's just there's nothing there in my opinion. So sorry, Adnan, I don't mean to hate on you right there, buddy. Big fan of your other stuff, but not so much as a play-by-play guy. As for the match, thought it was a really good match. Nice back and forth between Flair, Rhea, and Charlotte there. I liked kind of the spots on the outside. I thought that was nice. A good flurry of strikes as well. Some nice armbar spots I thought were pretty kind of set up pretty well there. I will say this. I was a big fan of kind of the setup where they had with the double natural selection.
Yes.
There. I thought that was really well done. Some funny like twists and turns with Asuka to get the double pin with Charlotte there. I think that was kind of weird, but you know, I thought Charlotte Flair just continues. Like, she has so much talent, man. And all these girls like are obviously crazy talented, but Charlotte Flair, like, I thought she was gonna do another corkscrew off the top. Like, she likes to do the moonsault, but I thought she was gonna pull a corkscrew. This is controversial. I just don't feel people give Charlotte the credit she really deserves, because she does have a significant presence whenever she has a match over other wrestlers. And as for the finish, I think it was just the camera guy screwed up, because there was the big kick, right? Mm-hmm. And then she fell off the apron. I didn't see that either. So I'm like, so when the three count came, I was like really expecting Charlotte to kind of, you know, stop it, and it never happened. So I was a little surprised there, but I am happy with the Rhea Ripley winning. You got to keep her credible, and the only way to keep her credible is keep that title on her for now. So I'm okay with it. I like the match. I thought it was a solid B.
Yeah. Yeah, that it was what you would have hoped that these three women could put on. I mean, looking at, regardless of the storyline, which is kind of a funky storyline with Rhea and Asuka and Charlotte, I think all three women are, as you said, are insanely talented, and they did put on a match that you would expect. They didn't blow me away, but they didn't disappoint either. It was kind of like, okay, yeah, that's what I thought it would be. And it was very good. And the ending, as you said, probably a camera angle fail by the cameraman, because I don't see any other reason. And it was told to Corey Graves, who said it on air. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it now. So that's fine. And, I also noticed that Charlotte Flair's gear was trending on Twitter. Her gear was an homage to Cruella De Vil. She was wearing, like, the patch black and white. So that was actually supposed to be kind of a cue to Cruella De Vil, the villain. So it was a very, it wasn't lost on Twitter, which I didn't actually pick up on until I saw it. So,
I actually had that in my, because I do this series called Did You Catch That? I did not post it actually yet. I'm not sure if I'm going to still post it, because I have some other stuff to do, but I actually had that in there. I also have, if you don't know, the Rey Mysterio was actually dressed up as Batman's old comic outfit as well.
Oh, so, man. Okay. Well, okay, I'd missed that completely. See, that's you're more observant than I am with that kind of stuff, and so, but
that's the job, yeah, my friend.
I know. Certainly, you do it well. But I guess this match was fine. And Rhea Ripley winning, I actually picked Charlotte to win this, and so I was wrong. Rhea Ripley retained. And you know what? If you're going to have a WrestleMania championship change hands, like the Raw Women's Championship, you want it to mean something and not just have it dropped the next pay-per-view. I think that would have sent the wrong message. Now that I think about it, it would have sent the wrong message to the women's division. And you're right. I don't think Charlotte Flair does get the credit she deserves. There are times, though, during her career or the last several years where it feels like Charlotte overload, where she's always in a title picture, always in your face. She was like a double champion at one point. And it reaches a point of just too much Charlotte. And her injury that had happened was, to me, last year, perfectly timed. Not that you want to see a talent get injured, but to me, it was like, I need a break from Charlotte. And it came at a perfect time. And when she came back, I was, you know, it was just like a breath of fresh air. She is clearly the alpha female of the women's division. And whether the women there like it or not, I'm sure there's some true friction there between Charlotte and the women in the locker room, where they feel that she always gets the opportunity, that she's always here in the spotlight, but she's deserving. She's got a presence. She is superior in the ring. She's improved on the mic. She's reinvented herself. I know she's straightening her hair now, and she's got new makeup and new outfits. That kind of stuff makes a difference. She has really just become the true Charlotte Flair now. I don't know. I'm loving it. I have no problem with Charlotte Flair here. Not involved in the decision. It protects her, and Rhea remains champion.
Yeah, I think you cleared it up pretty perfectly there.
All right, well, let's move on. Rey Mysterio and Dominic, who was injured, but we all knew what was going to happen. I think this one, you know, out of all the matches, seemed one of the matches that seemed sort of predictable given the circumstances and given the struggle, the babyface that they have to overcome. And you have Dominic, who's injured, and you know what's going to happen. He's going to come out. WWE loves to make their history. So you knew going in that there's a very high chance of the Mysterios becoming tag team champions. So once again, Mr. Botch Guy, take it away on this.
First of all, it's pretty predictable. When he got injured, I'm like, oh, he's going to get to do the Brock Lesnar thing where he's just going to come back at the last second and pull out the win. And of course, that's exactly what happened. I don't know. I really don't have too much like affection. Like, not affection. I don't know what the word I'm using. Word I'm using here. I maybe like excitement for the match itself, except for obviously the ending and the finish. I would actually more prefer to hear what you thought about the match overall, because I do want to talk about the finish. But as for the match itself, I don't know. I'm curious what you thought about it.
The match itself, I thought was, you know what, I thought it was good. I think it was really a tribute to how good Rey Mysterio has been. It's like he's frozen in time. Rey Mysterio has barely lost a step, and he has been in the ring for like 20 plus years. This guy has just will not age. He is still almost as good as he once was, and I think that him in this quote handicap match for about 75% of the match was good. I could do without the kick out of finishers constantly. This is kind of just a running theme throughout almost every show. And the first 3 out of 4 matches, you had kickouts of finishers. And it's like, you know, have we all just become complacent to kickouts of finishers? Have we all just kind of said, well, it's expected. We shouldn't feel that way, but...
Here's my opinion quickly. I feel like the super kick, I'm not talking about kickouts, but like the super kick, I feel like every wrestler should have signature moves that no one touches. And I believe a super kick should be a finisher and not a setup move or even a clothespin move. I feel like so many wrestlers are doing the suicide dives and these super kicks and makes them devalue these moves so significantly, especially when Ziggler goes and does it so well. It like that could be used as a finisher, but because so many people use it nowadays, it really makes the move weaker. And that's just something I wanted to just quickly bring up.
No, I couldn't agree more that those types of things. I mean, look at the DDT. The DDT used to be a finish, and it's just a transition move. And same with the superkick. It's a transition move. Everyone does it. If someone actually kicks you the way that they're trying to make you believe they're kicking that person, it's a knockout shot, and it should be. I mean, it was Shawn Michaels' finish, and it should remain that way. If Ziggler wants to, apply that finish to his own, fine, but keep it a finish. It should not be transitional. It's you know that it's never going to end a match, and it should. I could go on a rant about that whole thing, and like you said, suicide dives, the overuse of it, and Braun Strowman doing things that, while it's insane, we'll get to his match. I don't think he should just because he can. But anyway, I think that, yeah, this match was fine. And I'm fine with the Mysterios winning. And the reason I'm fine with it is because it's ultimately setting up for the Usos to challenge the Mysterios probably in the next month or sooner and gain those championships so that the Bloodline, although it's not labeled as such, have all the gold. And I think that's exactly what this is set up to do. It's fine for the father and son moment. It's a feel-good moment, and they can dub some nice harmonic music over this in some documentary of the first other father and son tag team champions. Fine, whatever.
Well, I thought, did you not like that though?
No, it's cool. It's cool. I have no problem with it. Like you said, I have very little emotional investment towards the Mysterios. Like I'm just kind of like okay. I'm nostalgic towards Rey. Dominic does nothing for me on the mic or as a presence. He's good in the ring, but Dominic to me has been completely detached from me. Like he's just there for me anyway. So it was a cool moment. I mean, if you're actually thinking about it, and I'm a father now, so I'm kind of like, yeah, that would be pretty damn cool. So I get it. But
I love the moment. I thought I did not need to get reminded every 30 seconds that it was the history making moment. Like how many times during the matches you say, do you know if the Mysterios win here, it's the father son. Hey, did you know that if they win here, this is history in the making? Oh, did you know that a Dominic Mysterio, do you know he's the son of Rey Mysterio? But by the way, I agree wholeheartedly that Rey has not lost a step. Like it's insane. Like he might be the most consistent worker in WWE history. And I'm not even exaggerating. I truly think he might be. As for the ending, yeah, I thought it was great. I really enjoyed the ending. I never even thought about it with the whole Bloodline thing. And now it makes all the sense in the world. So, I'm okay with that. I'm perfectly fine with that.
And one last thing I'll say on this match before we move on is you know that there's a problem with finishers being kicked out of and the fans expecting it to. But now even the wrestlers are expecting it to. The reason I say that is when Mysterio, who had gotten his ass kicked for the majority of the match,
gets a zigzag right in front of his son. His son doesn't even come to save him for the three count. He goes, eh, it's a finish. He'll kick out. I mean, it was like the lamest trying to come in to save him from a three count ever. And he just looks at him and he goes, oh, well, I guess that's going to be the end of the match or he's going to kick out. I mean, that is one thing I'm like, dude, why are you just standing there? Go break up the count. So, I don't know. That's just one thing. But cool. It's a cool moment for them. And I'm sure in real life that they are truly, like, you know, over the moon about this. And I'm sure that they are they are as close as I believe they're showing us that they are on camera behind the scenes. So it is a cool moment. You know, I'm happy for them. Okay. Damian Priest. Oh, God, help me. Damian Priest versus The Miz in a lumberjack match. Johnny, I don't even want to say it. I hate saying Johnny Drip Drip. John Morrison goes back and goes to the lumberjack room. Apparently, they give all the lumberjacks a name tag now because they all just hang out in a room. When he opens the door, who's there? Well, I don't know if it's the cast of The Walking Dead or part of the cast of some kind of zombie apocalypse movie. Or I mean, we all know what it is. Army of the Dead. Batista is obviously starring in that movie. And that's the reason, I guess, why they did this. And albeit the makeup was fine, I'm going to pause. What did you make of this match and the Army of the Dead surrounding the ring with the fog and all that? Hey, so if you guys haven't listened to the podcast Long Shot Leaders yet, you're missing out. And you may ask, what's so special about this podcast? Well, number one, it is hosted by Michael Stein. He's an entrepreneur, actor, filmmaker, comedian, and self-help expert. And he's come up with a really great idea for his show. What he does is tell stories of underdogs who found success. For example, some of his guests that he's had on, Sean Spector, he's the co-founder of Gamefly and Dropoff. Bruce Valanche, he's a 6-time Emmy Award winner, writer, and actor. And most recently, he interviewed former WWE writer Vince Russo, and the conversation was awesome. I mean, we got insight from Vince that I have not heard from any other podcast, including what he believes makes a great wrestler, why some people can't stand Vince Russo today because of the on-screen heel character that he played. And he talked about something that means even more to him than the massive ratings that occurred during the Attitude Era. So guys, go check out Long Shot Leaders with Michael Stein. It's available on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. It's already got a perfect 5-star rating. I mean, that's unheard of with podcasts. So go check out Long Shot Leaders with Michael Stein. There is such a great diversity of hosts and topics that it will definitely inspire you, and you'll be able to find something that you can relate to. So go check out Long Shot Leaders today.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
That was the most elaborate commercial I have ever seen on a pay-per-view in my entire life. Okay. Let's say, hypothetically, I am 10 years old or younger. I think that would be the greatest segment I have ever seen in WWE history. Oh, it would have been so cool seeing all the zombies and all that stuff. Unfortunately, I am a 35-year-old boomer now. So maybe I don't get it. I think it was trying to be fun, and I guess it was fun. But the entire time I was thinking, if you're a casual like watcher, and let's just say you're at a bar, even though right now COVID probably not, but just say you're at a bar, they have the wrestling on, and you see a bunch of these zombies attack wrestlers in the middle of the ring. Like, or if you're watching it and someone walks by, it's not a wrestling fan. Hey, watch this wrestling. This is great. And then they see this. Like, what do you think their opinion will be? Do you know what I mean? Like, it was so ridiculous. Was it so bad that it was good? Like, I don't even know what to even think. I think it made a mockery out of wrestling, but at the same time, it was so bad. Kind of enjoyed it. I have no idea, man. I want to go off on a tangent on this, but I've seen, remember the old day?
The old day.
yeah, remember the New Day? They had the old Day transformed. And then the story of life with Bayley.
Mm-hmm.
I think those were worse than that. But I think because it was a commercial, basically, that was on live TV, I think that's what made maybe this worse. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I thought it was ridiculous. I don't know how to... Let me hear your rant here.
Okay. So I've had time to cool off. And I know that some of our listeners have waited valiantly for me to just completely destroy this segment. And
I'm ready for this. I got my drink ready for this. So go off. I'll save my rants for future stuff. But I'm ready for this. I'll just sit back and mute myself.
Okay. So here's what I thought. First of all, let me dampen people's expectations by saying, is this the worst thing I've ever seen in wrestling? The answer is no. I've seen worse things in wrestling. Certainly worse things. Because this wasn't an actual angle, okay? This was not somebody trying to make a segment good. This, as you said, was just one long infomercial, and it was for the Army of the Dead. And Bayley, This Is Your Life, I think, was worse, because that was not meant to be bad. That was actually meant to be part of a storyline. Katie Vick, not meant to be bad, but it was awful. There have been many worse things. Now, that said, like you mentioned, if you had a friend over, right, and they were like watching it with you, and you're like, hey, just give this wrestling thing a chance, and they see this, they're going to look at you and go, you actually watch this crap? Like, that's what a friend would say to you, a true friend that would go, dude, I can't watch this. You seriously watch it? It would be embarrassing as a true fan of wrestling to try to introduce somebody else to wrestling and go, yeah, man, this is great, isn't it? I mean, it is just a complete and utter embarrassment for WWE to bring them into a match. It was bad enough when I saw them in their, quote, lumberjack backstage room, which apparently, again, they have their own name tag now. And they're all just hanging out waiting for some kind of life form to come in so they can all just devour them. I don't know. And then they followed Morrison to the ring. That's when I said, oh, no. Like, it was bad enough seeing them backstage. When I saw them on the move and escape from the room and they're moving around, I really didn't know what to do. At that point, my body temperature was rising significantly. And I said, I know what they're going to do. And sure enough, sure as hell, the ring gets surrounded by smoke. They're coming out. For those Game of Game of Thrones fans, which my wife and I are actually watching for like the third time, I felt like I needed to just come in there with fire or dragon glass and just take these people out, because it was an embarrassment of just on another level. That you said it looked like it was so bad that it's good, but that only applies to very specific situations. There are things that are so bad that they're good, but then there are things more often than not that are so bad that they are really bad. This was really bad because, yes, it was involved in a Damian Priest Miz match, which really nobody gives a damn about the outcome. Let's be honest. No one really cares. I couldn't find anybody that was emotionally invested in that match. So at least they buried it in the least important match possible.
Let me say this quickly.
Yeah.
They completely overshadowed Damian. Like, Damian Priest is a laughingstock now, completely, in the WWE.
Oh,
like,
God.
Like, what? Let's see. He teamed up with Bad Bunny, and Bad Bunny is amazing, and no one talks about Damian Priest. And now he's doing this thing, and now everybody's going to be talking about how the Miz got eaten by zombies. Like, zombies.
Well, I didn't even get to that part yet. So, yeah. God, this is what makes me really wonder. Like you said, I'm 36, so I'm like, hey, what am I doing with my life? Why am I watching this right now? I don't know what or who they were trying to appeal to, other than, hey, we got a whole bunch of money from this movie studio, and we got to run this promotion. Let's just do it. Or if Vince is like, damn it, you know what would be great? If they were the Lumberjacks. And he, you know, it comes up with this idea, instead of just having them backstage in an area that I could at least tolerate them in. Then we get, of course, the finish, and Damian Priest goes over, fine, as we expected. You know, that's not a surprise. But then, of course, they come in. The zombies come in to devour the Miz, and they just basically lay on him, right? Like, they just lay on him. They just kind of keep him warm. They're all huddling together like it's, you know, cold, and they're keeping him safe.
It was putrid. It was eye-rolling. It was bad. It was every adjective that I can think of that's a four-letter word that I can't say on my show. It was embarrassing. It was flat-out embarrassing. So I have nothing else to say about this, and hopefully Damian Priest, like you said, to me is the collateral damage of the last several months. Damian Priest, every time I see him, I just don't get a good feeling anymore because he's involved in so much garbage. The Miz, you know. The Miz is always involved in this kind of stuff. It kind of goes hand-in-hand with his career. But Damian Priest, who just essentially got called up, I feel for him.
How long until one of the zombies become the 24/7 champion?
Stop.
You know, and how about R-Truth makes a zombie faction and then he could be the leader of the, and then he's the leader with the 24/7 champion, huh?
Stop. No. See, the problem is you're going to give somebody an idea and then Vince is going to run with it, right? Like somebody's listening right now.
For sure.
Yeah. And you're like, we haven't seen R-Truth in a while. That'd be hilarious. Wouldn't it be to see R-Truth carrying the championship and they're all just dragging themselves towards R-Truth to try. No. I mean, it was clearly, I would hope, local talent that were in the Tampa area that...
I don't think so, man.
No?
Those zombies look like they did a great... Like, as zombies...
The makeup was good.
They looked way too good, like, as zombies. Like, so the way their mannerisms were.
But they took bumps.
Maybe they want to take... Maybe they asked which ones of you guys want to take a bump on a pay-per-view, right? Honestly, the zombie lumberjacks had a more credible push than the Retribution did, to be honest. I don't know, man. One of them looked like Ellen DeGeneres. There's another one that looked like Elvis.
Oh, Elvis. I saw the dead Elvis, yes.
I don't really know what to say anymore.
This is, yeah, I mean, honestly, but should I really be surprised, though? That's the thing. Like, I saw this and I wasn't really surprised because what did they do with a lot of the cinematic matches over the pandemic era? Like, I mean, I was not a fan of the majority of them because they were just so out of touch to me and not my style of wrestling. So I think they took that cinematic part and they were like, oh, cool, we can bring it to life and make it actually in ring. And they were salivating at that opportunity. And I shouldn't be surprised given all the hocus pocus nonsense that they did. And okay. I mean, I will say probably the worst thing I've ever seen, if someone's asking, the worst match I've ever seen on TV that was absolutely embarrassing. You don't have to go back too far. To me, it was last year's Money in the Bank when they scaled the corporate ladder and they were in the headquarters. Maybe you feel differently. To me, that was the absolute abomination of wrestling.
Really?
On so many levels. I don't even know where to begin with that match. Yes.
I like that match.
I can't
the throwing
turn on
off
that.
The roof stuff wasn't the great.
Well, no, thing. It didn't. Yeah, somebody threw Rey Mysterio off the roof, and like no one even talked about it. Right?
One of them got thrown off the roof, and they were there next. Next episode or Monday Night Raw or whatever, the next Raw, and they said that he hung on the edge of the
Yeah, you're right. The way that he got thrown off. No. Oh my God. Okay, let's move on because this was just god awful. Okay, something that was not god awful. The SmackDown Women's Championship. Bianca Belair, of course, defeats Bayley, and I don't think that was a surprise either. The thing with this card, you look up and down, there was a lot of predictable outcomes, and they didn't do a whole lot to swerve you either, which is fine. I don't need to be swerved every time if it's not the right move. And Bianca Belair defeats Bayley, and I thought was a very good match. Was it as good as Sasha Banks and Bianca? I don't think so. But it was good. I really, really liked this match, I think, probably more than most. But I thought that they had good chemistry, given that they haven't been on a big stage together before. Bianca Belair was put over like $1 million. The announcers were reminding us how great her stamina is and that she, her cardiovascular, all these things about just putting her over. And that's their job. That's fine. And so Bianca Belair, again, shows you how she can rise to the occasion in a big moment. Yes, there was the botch at the end with her hair. Now, even if that botch didn't happen, which I think is really one of the only botches of the show, is that, you know, do you want Bianca Belair using something like that, even if the botch didn't happen and it went cleanly, to win the match? And they could say, oh, turnabout's fair play. Yeah, but it's her own hair. I mean, you're not, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess the equivalent would be, your opponent's trying to pull your tights, so you reverse it and pull their tights and get the victory. It's still kind of underhanded to do, but I understand the logic. However, it is kind of a tainted victory with Bianca Belair. But overall, I really like this match. I don't have any complaints about it. What about you?
I think that was Bianca Belair's best match in the WWE.
Wow.
I truly believe that was she did a great job. She's getting better. She's getting better every single match, getting more confident in the ring. I thought Bayley was, you know, taunting really well there and playing the veteran role quite well. And I Bayley's a good talent now, man. She's kind of becoming like the Miz of the females, no? Like, she can kind of be put anywhere around and do really well. And, you know, I can see her in comedy stuff and I can see her in serious stuff. So I'm a big fan of what Bayley's doing, and Bianca looked great. The ending was weird. I understand what they were trying to do, use the hair to kind of make a dirty finish for Bianca, but I thought they got enough of the hair, so it wasn't really worth. Like, I didn't make a video on it on my YouTube channel or my Twitter or anything like that. So it's not like it was that bad. I thought it was just like kind of sloppy more than anything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I also agree. Like, there's not too much to say about it. Another keyword again. Ready? Balanced match. Another balanced match.
Yeah. Though they should have just renamed this to WrestleMania Balance. I mean, like, it was this was just a kind of by the numbers pay-per-view. I mean, it was just kind of there. It was fine. We've seen way worse. We've seen way better. It's just kind of like, cool. Okay, cool pay-per-view. Let's move on. I don't think this is a pay-per-view anyone's going to rewatch. Maybe with the exception of a match or two. This may be one of them. This was really good, and it does remind you that Bayley is a top-tier contender, even if she's not going to grab that championship probably for some time. And we've seen Bayley. We know her 300-plus day reign. She's a made woman. And now she's just trying to adapt and evolve. And she's done it with even frizzing up her hair, something like that, adding the laughing to her character, changing a little bit up of the outfit she's wearing, like little things like that. And the taunting, like you said, those little nuances make all the difference to make it her character feel a little bit fresh. And like you said, she can play multiple roles. I expect her to be probably still in the championship picture, given the outcome of this match. She's going to be complaining about on SmackDown. And did you see what she did? She illegally used her hair. I mean, so she's got a griping point that'll spill into Hell in a Cell, I think. So any final thoughts before we move on to the two main events?
No, that's good.
All right. The WWE Championship match, Bobby Lashley versus Braun Strowman versus Drew McIntyre. And again, one of these very confusing rules here with triple threat rules. But go ahead. I'll let you take this one first.
Well, it was interesting. Kind of confusing. It was, once again, they did the whole, I got injured, I'm going to disappear and then come back again, which was, I thought, again, like the word of the day, ready? Another balanced affair. I thought every competitor looked strong. Braun Strowman, when they want him to look decent, they can do a good job. The only problem I have with him is, like, he has no gimmick right now, and I feel like he kind of needs one. And I know this whole choo-choo train thing is kind of going on with him, but I don't know. I just feel like he doesn't really have a gimmick right now, and I feel like he could go much further with a gimmick. I don't know what. I'll ask WWE Creative to ask what kind of zombie character he wants to be for the Monday Night Raw or SmackDown.
You're going to kill me.
But honestly, Definitely thing, something there. Drew McIntyre, man, he did a lot of power spots, more than usual. He had his, what was that move that he hit? The
Michinoku driver,
right? Yep. Yeah, he hit a Michinoku driver on Strowman, and he made it look so easy, too.
The stalling suplex with Braun.
Yeah, the stalling, that was nice as well. Mm-hmm. Of course, the spot, you know, with the whole LED lights.
How many times have we seen that?
Okay, remember the first time we saw it when they went through, or not the first time, but the first time since Angle and Shane McMahon kind of threw each other? Remember when Braun speared someone through it? The very first time they stopped the match and everything? Man, I was so crazy. I remember. And then they've done that spot like five times after that. And it just, every time they do that spot, it's not as fun to watch. I've seen it already. I've seen it. Like, stop doing the same thing over and over. Same with the barricade breaking, and it just, try something different, and mm-hmm. people will react differently to it. I guess they're being safe right now because, of course, there's no fans in the building, right? So they could basically do whatever the hell they want and pump in whatever sound effects they want, right? So I did like that there was a Holy S chant in the middle of the match.
I did too, yeah.
I thought that was piped in pretty well. Mm-hmm. So way to go, Vince, on that one for sure. I don't know if the crowd was doing it, but I think it was piped in. I don't know. I thought it was a good, solid match. Of course, the ending with Bobby. I don't know. Like, it was another predictable ending. I don't know. A balanced, I don't know, 8 out of 10. Same thing.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm not tooting my own horn, but I will say that even the exact finish, not only who was going to win, but I called the exact finish of how the match would end, given the circumstances of this. And you were trying to protect McIntyre. Strowman was there to take the fall. Lashley was going to come in, take advantage, hit the spear, and goodnight the lights. And that's exactly what happened, and that's fine. I think that was the right move. But first of all, you're right about Braun Strowman. I've been saying this for many, many, many weeks now, that Braun Strowman is extremely one-dimensional. He's a guy that's just angry about everything all the time. Everything angers him. He's always yelling. He's always sweating. I mean, can we just move on from the Monster Among Men, or not 180 degrees, but for God's sakes, I mean, at least he changed his you know, too tight army type of camo outfit that he was wearing. I mean, I'll give that's good. He changed it to like a tank top and you know, I don't know if he was wearing tights or jeans or what, but that is good. But man, does he need something to latch onto? He's so one dimensional. At the same time, he's really good in the ring. He's gotten in himself in amazing shape. If you look when he first debuted in the Wyatt family, how heavy he was to now, the guy has busted his ass to get himself in shape. I can't take anything away from him. He's done such a nice job of getting himself in shape. And his promo work is fine. It doesn't blow me away. It's not awful. It's just kind of like, it's serviceable. And I just feel like Strowman needs something, and he doesn't have that third or even second dimension. He's just this monster. You look at him and you go, okay, who's he going to, you know, power slam? Who's he going to scream at? Who's he going to put through a table? And that's all superficial stuff. I want something deeper with Braun Strowman because I don't feel anything for him other than he's a great talent who can do more than he should, given his size. And he has a lot of potential, and I'm not saying that, again, he shouldn't be in a title picture, but I just feel like he's very one-dimensional. Yeah. That said, I will say, with Braun Strowman, just because he can do something, should he do something? You know, they were trying to mimic the current WWE style of what, you know, lighter guys in say, the light heavyweight division, if there is such a thing, or guys that are like 200 pounds or, you know, in 170, 180 range. They're doing things that, do they really need to do it? Just because you can, you know, I want to see a different style of wrestling and not just mimic the typical quote WWE style we see today with, the Michinoku driver was actually really cool, but Braun Strowman jumping off the top rope and doing like a somersault dive onto somebody. I mean, crazy stuff like that. It's oh my God moments, but when you dig deeper and go, but do I really want to see that from Braun Strowman? Does every match have to feel the same? I don't want every match to feel the same. So there is that, but I guess it depends on how you look at it. As far as the spot with Bobby Lashley, I mean, we've seen it 100 million times. The pyro goes off. Apparently he's supposedly electrocuted, which actually is not the case, but he goes off and you're trying to forget about him, or at least that's the objective. The WWE is trying to get you to just forget about. Oh, he's out of the ring. He's out of the match. And you get your 1-on-1, and it ended up being Braun Strowman and Drew McIntyre beating the holy hell out of one another. And he hits the Claymore. McIntyre does, of course. Lashley comes in, boom, hits the spear as Drew wasn't involved in the decision, and Bobby Lashley retains. It's the right move, and more importantly, the best thing out of this whole thing is McIntyre gets away from the title picture. He desperately needs also to change his mission up, do something beyond the WWE Championship, because we've seen him chase it for like 18 months now. Like, I'm kind of over him going after the championship. So do you feel the same way or no?
Hey, so if you guys haven't listened to the podcast Long Shot Leaders yet, you're missing out. And you may ask, what's so special about this podcast? Well, number one, it is hosted by Michael Stein. He's an entrepreneur, actor, filmmaker, comedian, and self-help expert. And he's come up with a really great idea for his show. What he does is tell stories of underdogs who found success. For example, some of his guests that he's had on, Sean Spector, he's the co-founder of Gamefly and Dropoff. Bruce Valanche, he's a 6-time Emmy Award winner, writer, and actor. And most recently, he interviewed former WWE writer Vince Russo. And the conversation was awesome. I mean, we got insight from Vince that I have not heard from any other podcast, including what he believes makes a great wrestler, why some people can't stand Vince Russo today because of the on-screen heel character that he played. And he talked about something that means even more to him than the massive ratings that occurred during the Attitude Era. So guys, go check out Long Shot Leaders with Michael Stein. It's available on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. It's already got a perfect 5-star rating. I mean, that's unheard of with podcasts. So go check out Long Shot Leaders with Michael Stein. There is such a great diversity of hosts and topics that it will definitely inspire you, and you'll be able to find something that you can relate to. So go check out Long Shot Leaders today.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
But, like, isn't that kind of, like, indication? I don't know. That's not a word, right? Indicative? That's the word I'm looking for. Of where Drew McIntyre kind of is right now. Like, we don't want to see him in the title picture anymore. Like, he's doing a good job, but
right.
It's just, like, I feel like a misdirection would be kind of nice for him. So I agree with what you're saying. It's just, I'm kind of not sick and tired of seeing him in the title picture, but I feel like a change of pace would be nice as well. So I definitely agree with you, spot on. And man, that Roman Reigns guy, I don't think Drew McIntyre is at that level yet. And we will talk about him right now, man.
Yeah, because man,
you can start this fire off.
Okay. All right. So I'm sure there will be things that I miss, and you can certainly tag on everything you have to say. Okay. This match, man, oh man, like you said, Cesaro came to play. And I'll say, concluding this match with everything that happened, certainly Cesaro will be waking up tomorrow morning, or this morning actually for me, as it's past almost 1 a.m. here. But he'll be waking up going, oh, I mean, he is going to be sore. I know that he's superhuman strength. The guy's a machine, but he took a beating from everyone in that match. And no one came to help him, by the way. Like, nobody came to help him. You know, this was indicative, to steal your word, of WWE needing a massive babyface, and they need somebody to counter Roman Reigns. They don't have that person right now. And so they it's like a glaring hole. They don't have that top guy that you're like, oh man, I can't wait till he faces him. There's nobody right now. Nobody. Okay. Yeah. Drew's on a different brand. There's nobody. Okay. Big E. Well, Big E's not ready yet. Big E is probably going to be SummerSlam or beyond. It's just, there's nobody left. Daniel Bryan's gone. Cesaro, they're trying to make, and that's fine. They're trying to get him to that level, but it's just, I was waiting for, like, you know, that glass breaking moment when Stone Cold would come out to make the save or something, and nothing happened. No one came to Cesaro's aid. But this match itself was so good. Cesaro, the chain wrestling, the submission into reversal, all of it. Oh my God. Cesaro, I mean, I give this match an A. I mean, it was so good, from both ends, and not just Cesaro, but Roman Reigns, who has shown you that the days of him being that limited kind of video game version of a wrestler that even I made fun of at the time several years ago is long, long gone. His music is awesome. His presence is spot on. Paul Heyman adds a lot to his character as well. And he beat Cesaro clean. This was not a tainted Jey Uso, Jimmy Uso conundrum of whose loyalty lies where. This was straight up Roman Reigns defeating Cesaro. And that's fine. I don't always need a heel to cheat to win. You can still be an SOB and win clean. That's still a thing. And Roman Reigns, I think, adds credibility. Also, Cesaro won in the loss here. I don't think anyone really expected Cesaro to win, but Cesaro still won in this loss. Jay comes out, super kicks Cesaro. Seth Rollins, which I totally forgot about. I mean, I really forgot about him until his music hit, coming down with that, like, spilled paint jacket. I mean, I don't even know what to call it. He's coming out in the most ridiculous outfit. Yeah. Like, I don't know where he gets his attire. So, I mean, Seth Rollins comes out in the most just idiotic, hilarious outfits you've ever seen and smiles at Roman. I know in the moment I said, oh boy, are they trying to turn Seth Rollins babyface here? And they didn't, thank God. And he just attacks Cesaro, which is inevitably going to lead to a Hell in a Cell match, you would think, at the next pay-per-view. But this match was really good. Seth Rollins added another bruise or two to Cesaro with the stomp and with the arm in the chair, which was brutal, twisting the arm. Man, oh man. Credit to really everyone involved here.
Wow, that was good. That was really good, Matt, by the way. I just want to mention that.
Okay, really, sorry.
No, you're so passionate about it. I loved it. I was just sitting back drinking my Coke. I'm like, this is fantastic. It's a good 10 minutes straight. Love it. Just letting you know right off the bat, I didn't believe that if you could have a clean finish and to make Cesaro look good, and they did it. They made Cesaro look like an absolute star, and he lost clean. When was the last time we saw that happen? Like that well. Like Cesaro looked like $1 million, like you said. Like he's at another level now. I am looking at him differently than I looked at him before. And I've never looked at him this way. I've always thought he had all the talent in the world, but I truly believe that he is on another planet right now. I just think it would be a complete shame if he's out of this picture completely. I hope they do something, maybe triple threat here with Roman and Seth and Cesaro, and then you could have Seth take the pin, right? And then you have Roman Reigns survive, and maybe Cesaro can win the next pay-per-view or something. I don't know, but I thought Cesaro was amazing, man. And just the way like I said, chain wrestling, man. There's such great chain wrestling. I just love the mannerisms Roman Reigns does. The way they sold the arm, the right arm, like he was selling that for little punches. Like he wasn't able to pick up anything. Like it was such good selling. He made it look like he was legitimately hurt. And it's just a natural talent with him, with Cesaro. I love that it took multiple guillotines to take him out. He got out of the first one. I love that he didn't tap. I love that he kind of just went out, you know, strong. I can't believe it was a clean finish just because of all the storylines that was attached to this for so long. So it's kind of shocking to me that it was a clean ending. But at the same time, is because of how good the match was, I'm okay with it. And I thought it was just a great match. Now, as for Jimmy and Jay, nothing happened with them, right? Like, no. There was no, I guess they're going to continue that on Monday Night Raw, basically. But Roman Reigns looks even stronger now, right? Because he got his win by himself, right? So I don't know, man. And Seth Rollins coming out, you said like you're hoping for a babyface, or thank God it wasn't a babyface. Oh my God. Like I when I was coming out, I thought he was joining with Roman Reigns, like legitimately joining the crew somehow, like the family. Because they're Shield members in the past. But come to think of it now, I would have loved a face turn there. Can you imagine Seth coming out, walking up to take a Cesaro, and then like attacking Roman Reigns with a super kick that I told you not to do? But oh my God, now you're making me think. Hmm. I don't know about the ending. I thought it was okay, balanced, I guess. I'm satisfied at the end of the show. But I thought there was going to be some more shenanigans, something bigger happening. So no, I don't know,
this pay-per-view, if you were looking for surprises, big returns, and oh my God moments, you would have been sadly disappointed from this pay-per-view. But not every pay-per-view has to have that. I think sometimes we have unrealistic expectations as fans. But it's funny, I don't know if you caught it on, what was it, last Friday, when Michael Cole called Cesaro an upstart. He labeled Cesaro as an upstart. I'm not kidding. And I'm like, Cole, like, what's your definition of upstart? I mean, the guy's been in WWE for 10 years. He's been wrestling for 15, 20 years. What the hell is it? Have we redefined what upstart means? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that was just a miscommunication on his part. But nonetheless, the little thing that you mentioned, and I think such a big deal, is Roman Reigns during the match. You know, when guys are in a match, 99% of the time, they're just in the moment. They're worried about the moves and the kickouts and everything. Roman is emotionally there throughout the match. What I mean by that is what you said, where he's making facial expressions, he's laughing, he's saying things under his breath that the mic is picking up. That kind of stuff, it makes you feel like you're not supposed to hear it, and it makes it more real, where they don't have a microphone in their hand. It's just the audio from the camera that catches it. That stuff that he does,
no one else is doing in their match. I mean, Roman Reigns is throughout. One of the things he said, what was it? Like, you don't belong here, or I told you, man, this is what's going to happen. Like, just trash talking throughout the match in an authentic way, smiling, all that kind of stuff that is really, I think, missed on a lot of matches in professional wrestling is such a big deal. And it adds to the emotional investment throughout the match, because as he does that, you're like, you want to see Cesaro just punch him right in the face. And that's emotional investment, man. So, yeah, this was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will say this. I'm curious where they're going to take this storyline. I really don't know what they're going to do here moving forward, but I am curious what they're going to do here for sure.
And Hell in a Cell's next. They moved that up about 5 months, I think. I mean, this was supposed to be Extreme Rules. So I don't know, maybe, I don't know why they just rebranded it or moved the pay-per-view up. I'm trying to think if there was something offensive that is something about Extreme Rules and thinking of politics or current situations. I'm like, I don't think that's, you know, offensive. So they wanted to move Hell in a Cell up, and they did it much earlier this year. So, yeah, I don't know where they're going with this either. We'll see where Jimmy and Jey Uso's loyalties lie. Yeah, so anything else about the pay-per-view before we close things out here?
No, it's an 8 out of 10. it was a perfectly balanced favorite. How many times did I say that, Al? Like,
somebody's keeping count. Times. I know somebody out there is like doing
someone
that.
Someone let me know on Twitter how many times I said it, man, because I feel like I've said it at least 7 times. But, yeah, man, this is a good average. Not average. It was above average show tonight. I think it was above average show.
I'd give it a B-. I mean, just B-. To me, it wasn't average. It was, like you said, I'd say slightly above average. So, yeah. All right. Well, I think we've concluded our conversation, but Hell in a Cell is next on June 20th. But before we go, of course, I want you to let all of our listeners know where they can find you again on social media and, of course, on YouTube.
Well, thank you so much for having me once again. I always have a blast doing this. I love doing this every single pay-per-view. So thank you so much. You can find me at botch_guy on Twitter. And my YouTube channel is The Botch Guy. Just go head over there. Give me a sub on there. And on Twitter, of course. I'm trying to get my Twitter game up there. I don't know. I'm new here. I heard it's toxic here. So you got to help me out me out a little bit there. And yeah, it's going to be pretty excited for the next pay-per-view. I hope it's a good show.
Absolutely. So thanks so much. And we will be talking very soon. 5 weeks goes quick. I mean, it's been 6 weeks since WrestleMania. 5 weeks is nothing. So
no problem.